Hi everyone, welcome to All Things Creative. I'm your host, Linda Riesenberg-Fissler, and I am very excited to be welcoming Kelly Garrett to the show. Kelly is a writer with some interesting twists, so we'll talk about that in a minute. I'm going to have Kelly introduce herself here shortly, but Kelly has two books that are out on the market that you can purchase today. They're mystery, murder, thriller, I guess you could say, with an interesting twist. Like I said, it's suspense. I don't want to give too much away because I want Kelly to tell us about them. And then she's also worked on writing for the TV show CBS drama Cold Case. So we'll talk a little bit about that too. But hi, Kelly. Welcome to All Things Creative.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I can't wait to delve into your writing process and all the neat things that have happened in your life, because I don't know how old you are, and I'm not going to ask because we don't ask ages. So
I don't care. I'm 40. I think I look good for 40, so I tell everybody I am 40 years old.
Well, there you go. I was going to say for a pretty short life, you've been packing a lot in for for this. So. Tell us, to start off, have you introduced yourself to us, what you've been up to, and like I said, your books and Cold Case and all that good stuff.
Okay, so obviously I'm Kelly. I write really funny amateur detective novels, and the series is called the Detective by Day series. The first book is Hollywood Homicide. It came out in 2017. It was published by Midnight Inc., and I was lucky enough to win the Agatha, the Anthony, the Lefty, and an Ippy Award for Best First Novel with that one. And actually, it was just named to BookBub's Top 100 Novels of All Time, or Crime Novels of All Time, which is really cool and surprising.
Congratulations.
And then the second, thank you. It's like people like John Grisham are like on that list. So it's kind of amazing to be listed there. And then the second book is Hollywood Ending. It came out in August of 2018. It was called the most fun book of the year by Crime Reads. So they're just very fun, lightweight, almost like cozy books. So if you like kind of fun Janet Ivanovich type books, beach reads basically with a black diverse lead, then that's, you should probably check them out if you want to.
So education, you said BS in magazine writing.
I've had a lot of different careers, but they've all been writing careers. So I have a undergrad degree in magazine writing, and I actually spent a couple years as a magazine editor. And then I have a master's degree in screenwriting from USC's film school. And so that's how I kind of got into Hollywood and working at Cold Case. And then I kind of I call myself a survivor. You know, after I survived, I kind of lived to tell my tale, and decided to kind of put some of those fun adventures and stories I've heard in kind of in these books. Mm-hmm. So that's where kind of like the idea of Hollywood Homicide and Hollywood Ending came from.
Yeah, well, so. Okay. Go Trojans, because everybody out there knows I'm a USC fan. So.
Oh, all right. I shouldn't admit this, but basically I went for grad school, and I was like 23, 24. And so, I hate to say it, I wasn't super connected to like anything that was not in this film, like the film school, you know? I never went to the games, and I used to always forget that like kids lived on campus. And I'd be like, it's Saturday. Why are all these people here? You know, like that's how disconnected I was. I was like, why are all these kids on here right now? So, but yeah, I was there for 2 years for my master's degree, and I will be paying it off for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I can identify with that one. I actually live in Ohio.
It's funny because I'm sorry, but you know, like obviously all this drama has been going on with like Lori Loughlin and her kids and USC, right. And everyone's like joking, like USC is not that hard to get into, and I'm like, well, actually, the film school is pretty hard to get into. So I'm like, maybe undergrad, but those grad programs are not easy.
Right. Yeah. It's exactly. I guess when I was 18, which is, you know, back in like 1979, 1980, you know, my plan was I was going to work for 5 years, get all this money together. And at the time I thought USC was a, you know, public school like UCLA. So it's like, yeah, then I'm going to go out to California and I'm going to establish my residency, and then I'm going to go to USC film school. And then I'm going to, No, I'm still in Ohio.
Surprise.
Yeah, surprise. I'm still in
Still there.
Ohio. So at least I'm writing books. That's good, you know? So
Yeah.
we'll hang on to that. But yeah, so cool. Very diverse background. I was reading through your biography. I was like, wow, this is, like I said, you have packed it in for a 40 years old girl.
Yes, a lot of different things.
So tell us a little bit about why you go to kind of that side of the crime. Did Cold Case give you that interest, or did you have that before you started writing for Cold Case?
No, I've always loved mysteries. Like when I was younger, I used to read like Joan Hess, Jane Jeffries, like a lot of those, cozy mysteries. And then when I was about 12, I discovered Sue Grafton and Kinsey Millhone, Barbara Neely with the Blanche White series. So I've always loved mysteries. The problem though is I have a very overactive imagination. Like there's a James Patterson book I read like probably when it first came out, and there's like a scene in that book that still haunts me, and it's been like 20 plus years, and so like I love mysteries, but I don't they can't be too graphic, like serial killing and torture. So for me, like that's why I like amateur detective novels, because you can get your mystery in there, but it's also kind of a light and fun, and so it's interesting because it's like I always say, people kind of sometimes they kind of talk down on cozies, but making murder funny is really hard.
It
And
is.
so I don't think cozy writers get enough credit for what they do. So.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of interesting because we started watching Killing Eve with Sandra Oh, my husband and I, and it's one of these things where I just keep looking at it going, because I this is kind of like my first experience with, the psychopath and it being funny. But I like both of these actresses that are starring in it. So this was one of these things where I just every once in a while I just look over at Tom and cock my head like, really? So, but it is really hard to write that. It's I can,
It is.
yeah, it's it, it's done very well, but it's just so strange for me because like I'm in the totally opposite range of I write espionage mystery and with some political intrigue. So I'm, always very serious. Occasionally I can get some laughs in there with some of my characters, fictional characters, but it's just really because it's also historical. So it's I don't know. I guess I just like the challenge of multitasking and sounds like you kind of do the same thing. So what are you what you have a day job, right?
Have a day job. Yes, I work in communications for a media company. So
Okay.
it's still writing based. So I
Okay.
stick with my theme.
But yeah, so let's get into what writing looks like for Kelly outside of work. So you go to work and you have a commute and you get home and what, you start writing or you're too tired and you save it for the weekend or
I wish I was like, I have friends who can like there's something on Twitter called the 5 a.m. Writers Club where people get up every morning at 5 a.m. and they write. And I wish I was that regimented. I'm so not. My favorite quote is like Dorothy Parker. The thing is like I hate writing. I love having written. And so I hate writing. The blank page scares me. So it's literally like after I've done everything else I could possibly do, then like about 8 o'clock at night, I'll like get in bed and I will finally force myself to write. But it's not a fun process for me. I love rewriting though. Like once it's on the page, I love to rewrite, but a blank page scares me, which is why I do like 25 page outlines. So
Oh, okay. So yeah, we're getting a little bit into your process. So you start out with an outline.
Yes, I don't I can I appreciate mystery writers who can pants like who don't use an outline, but
That's me.
I just don't know how you could do like I don't know like I'm in awe of you because I don't know how you can do that. And at least for me, and I mind you, I will change things in the outline. I'm not married to them, but
Right.
like I have to know something. I have to just know something. So.
Yeah, and I guess I for so somebody that is considers himself more of a pantser, I guess I should probably like say I don't write a physical outline, but in my head I write. Yeah, I kind of know where I'm going with it. I kind of know where my plot twists are going to come in, what my plot twists are. And so then I just start writing a free write. And of course, everybody's just like, are you kidding me? Three, it's like my I love free writing. unlike you, the white page doesn't scare me. So I just love just typing anything that comes, whatever scene comes to my mind, I start typing it out. And then I worry about where I'm going to plug it in later. So it's kind of a, so I guess, somebody told me I was a pantser. I was like, whatever. This is my style. This is my process.
Hey, if it works for you, it works
Right.
for you.
Right.
So.
But the downside of that is, I'm not putting something out like every 6 months because my free writes are typically 350,000 words.
Oh
So,
my goodness.
yeah. So now I have a bunch of deleted scenes that I can also share with my fans, or I could use them in the next book or something like that. So, so that's kind of like my process. And then, so when I hear that somebody actually outlines, and were you jokingly saying, did you say 25 page outline?
No, I'm not joking.
Really? Okay, so that's like a
Yeah,
350,000
no.
word free write. You understand that, right?
I think it comes from one with television writing, you have to have an outline. Obviously because of it's like you're spending $1 million per episode, so you have to know where you're going and what's
Exactly.
going to happen. It has to be approved by several different people.
Yes.
So I kind of have that background, and I think I kind of got used to that, and I kind of felt a little safety in that. So, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and one of the things I'm doing too right now is writing a script. So you're right. You have
Oh,
to know where
nice.
you're going with that kind of, you can't just sit down and say, okay, I'm just going to write, 900 pages of a script because nobody's ever going to film that. Yeah. So, and you
And you
got
have to
this.
be tight too.
I'm sorry?
It has to be tight. I think that's another thing that I think helps my writing too, is I'm very plot heavy, because to me, like in TV, every scene has to move the story forward because you only get like 42 minutes. So there's certain things that I think I learned in screenwriting, I learned in film school, and also working in television, I think definitely influences my writing. So
Right.
I'm curious to see how the opposite is, having you coming from a background where it's more novel writing. How does that affect your screenwriting?
Well, we for those of you who are listening, Kelly and I have not met in person. I actually found Kelly through the International Thriller that organization, the club.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's where I found you. So it's kind of interesting that we're getting into the conversation of our differences versus some other things, but we'll get to that. But anyway, you don't, my background when I started writing as a kid, I was writing like for favorite TV shows just for fun.
Oh,
So I
okay.
kind of started writing scripts, but not really knowing that I was writing scripts because I wouldn't write them in script forms. And then one of the things that I did was I actually wrote a script for Star Trek: The Next Generation, and
Oh, nice.
it got rejected, but Eric Stillwell, who rejected it, I actually sent it to Gene Roddenberry, registered mail. I was so brash, but anyway. So Eric Stillwell sent it back, but he had in the rejection letter, he basically gave me everything I needed to resubmit it successfully,
Oh,
including
nice.
agents to like contact. But stupid 22-year-old me thought, oh, it's rejected. I can't write. And I stopped writing at that
Oh
point.
my goodness.
Yeah, so
It's
what
so funny
happened?
because you probably want to like smack yourself now that you're older and you realize like what an opportunity like for him to do that was, right?
Yeah, my head still hurts because I hit it against the wall so hard. So it was one of those things where, like, I was in my let's see, late 40s, early 50s, I guess, early 50s, and found that in my painting studio because I took up oil painting at that point, and pulled that out and looked at it, and then went over and, like I said, hit my head against the wall a couple times and said, "All right, I'm writing my first novel," and that's what I did.
Oh,
So,
so at least you got something. It took a long time, but you got something out of
yes, I did.
it.
So that was my background. So, have you written like from kid on, or did you just decide that you liked writing at some point later?
When I was 5, I told my parents I wanted to be a novelist.
Well, there you
So,
go.
it just took a very long time because I was scared. So, that's why I did every other type of writing. Like I did journalism, then I did TV writing. And then finally, about 20, I think around 2011, 2012, I finally got started writing the book, and it took a while. A lot of stops and starts. But no, since I was five, so it's been a very long journey.
So in your outline, do you do a lot of character development in that outline, or do you just go right into the plot heavy and the character kind of develops itself along the way?
With the first book, I was developing the main characters, so I did a lot. I did character work. Part of it was to have it. Other part, I think, was to kind of procrastinate on writing this actual book. And then I think with the second one, I kind of definitely, I think for the second one, the idea for the plot came first, and then I figured out the character that would fit the plot, because the idea for the second book was based on a woman who was a publicist named Ronnie Chasen, who was leaving a I think she was leaving a premiere party for like some Christina Aguilera movie. And when she left, she unfortunately got killed in a drive, like a basically a carjacking gone wrong. And so it was like this big talk of Hollywood at the time, just because no one knew what happened originally. And she was like a very well-known publicist. And so the idea behind Hollywood Ending is a publicist for a award show is leaving their kind of like their award show party, pre-party, and she gets killed in an ATM, a botched a robbery gone wrong in an ATM after the party. And so, like I said, I kind of knew the idea, and I was like, "Well, how can I kind of take this character and make them into something?" You know, and I kind of took some other things I really like just about, you know, just me. Like I love gossip, so there's a gossip element to it. You know, I'm fascinated with award shows, so there's a lot of award show like insider information there too. So,
Oh, cool.
yeah, so it's funny because when I started the first book, I wasn't planning on it being very Hollywood focused. But then my friend was like, you know, you should just keep with this theme, you know, because I kind of that was the world I came from, you know, and it was the world I knew. And
Right.
so I did.
So are the character are there characters in both books that are or is are they two different? It's not a
No,
series
it's the
of them.
same.
It's the
It
same.
is a series. It's the same character. Her name is Dana Anderson. I describe her as a semi-broke, mega famous black actress. And then the other characters, she has two best friends. One of them I based on the Olsen twins. The idea of imagine if like the Olsen twins, like Mary Kate and Ashley, after Full House, one wanted to quit and the other wanted to keep going. And so the idea that you don't want to be famous, but you look just like the most famous person in the world. Like, how would you react to that? So
Okay.
that's the idea behind Emmy. So she kind of like is a hermit who's really good at computer stuff because she never leaves her house. She has another friend, Sienna, who is trying to set a world record for wearing red every day. And so you kind of see how that comes about in the first book. And then there's a for her kind of like her foil. She has a because there's no police in my book, so she has a character who is basically a private detective who's also looking into the case of the first book. And then
Oh.
I called myself being cute. So with a lot of cozies, you know, like the love interest is a cop. So my love interest is a guy who plays a cop on television because I was like, I can't do a cop, but I will do a little Hollywood twist on that. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So I assume like there's a lot of it, would you like classify it as like a film noir type of
No, it's a cozy. Like
just
someone described it as saying it's not like, you know, the cozies in like Chinatown. Like, you know, it's not the LA of Chinatown. It's a very funny, lightweight look at how Hollywood, kind of how absurd Hollywood is. So.
Great. Yeah. So it's, is there anything that, without going any further into like the outline and things like that? So you have your outline done, and then you get over your fear of the white paper. For days, do you go over in your head, okay, I'm going to start it here, and this is going to be the first sentence? I mean, I just have like this picture in my mind that you start typing this thing out, and then you start hitting the backspace or something.
No, I think One, I actually, it's funny you were saying free thought earlier. So I do journaling, and what I'll do is I'll just free thought into my journal and figure out how scenes, what kind of beats have to be in the scenes. Because, like I said, from my TV background,
Right.
you start the scene as late as you can, you end it as quick as you can, and it should move the story forward. So I kind of like will break down each scene and like what information, what key information we should get out of that, you know. And if I have like funny like lines, like I'm a big dialogue person, so if I have a funny line I want to include, I will like put that in there as a reminder. So
Yeah, that's the hardest thing. I don't know if you want to talk about this very much, but the writing software that is out there for geez, I'm drawing a blank. Final Draft. I bought a version of Final Draft so that I could start to turn my novels into to scripts, and it's really kind of interesting because they have a beat board and they have, all this different stuff. And I'm like, what the heck's a beat board? So, Kelly, what's a beat board? What's a beat board?
I never use, I use Movie Magic. What I want to say, so here's a good example. So on Cold Case, we had a writer's room, which is basically all the writers on the show would sit in a conference room and discuss what happens in the episode. And we would write what happened down on a whiteboard. So like all the scenes and like the plot points were on a whiteboard. So I'm assuming that the beat board's probably like the Final Draft electronic version of like the whiteboard that you see
Yeah, it's
and
very
like, you know.
similar. Think of it more like index cards. So index cards
Yeah.
that you would push up on a cork board or something. But yeah,
Yeah,
whiteboard.
I know people who use them. I've never used index cards. I think when I first started writing the first book, I was used to that whiteboard, so I got a whiteboard, but I kind of stopped doing that. So yeah, it's so funny. I wrote my first book in Movie Magic screenwriting software because I was used to it. And then, like, what it there's what is the one that people use now for novel writing that like everyone uses? It's so confusing.
Well, there's
Oh.
Wattpad, there's
No, it's
Scrivener's
a
another one.
software. Scrivener, it's
Scrivener,
Scrivener.
yeah.
Like I've tried to use Scrivener like twice and I'm like, I don't, this is too complicated for me. So but someone once said that I made Word Scrivener because I set up my document where I can like I have it where like you can move chapters around, like there's certain ways you can set up a document in Word that you can kind of have the side thing where you can jump to chapters, you can move them around really easy because you just do different heading settings. And so someone's like, oh, Kelly, you just Scrivenered Word. I was like, oh, okay. But I still was like, I don't need to buy Scrivener, do I? Because I just Scrivenered Word. So I just use Word now.
Yeah, I use Word as well. Mainly because I think it's a lot more flexible. I can't have somebody else's thought process driving how I'm writing, if that's a
Yeah.
kind of way. And then there's one that it still might be Scrivener, I don't know, but what scared me away from if it is Scrivener, what scared me away from it is like you could say, okay, I'm going to write for 2 hours, and then you get down to like the last 10 seconds or whatever, and the thing counts down, and it's like, oh no.
Oh no, yeah,
Yeah, I'm not
no.
going there. Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, not, yeah, not.
Although I've been trying this. Have you heard like you've heard of Pomodoro, the Pomodoro method? It's not even for writing, but the idea is that you focus on one task for 25 minutes, then you take a 5 minute break, and then you do it again for another 25 minutes. And so I've been trying to do that. And so it's been sometimes it works well, sometimes it doesn't. But I kind of it's kind of like basically sprinting, but it's more, I guess, you know, organized. Like, okay, it's going to be 25 minutes and then a break. So I've done that.
Yeah, I don't know. See, but it's kind of interesting. I like to write in really long sprints. So, or I should say
Like what,
marathon.
2 hours?
No, I like writing for like 8 hours.
Okay, basically, it's just like you're writing all day. Basically, it's like in a sprint, it's like a
Yeah,
marathon.
there's a bit a little bit of difference between you and I. It's like I don't I resigned from Procter and Gamble to start painting and writing. So
Wow.
yeah,
Congratulations.
thank you. Well, that's one reason why I live in Ohio. So like if I'm painting, like I'll teach painting class on Tuesday, so that'll be like, I have two classes that I teach on that day. So that's like the 8 hour day of painting. And then, I would love to spend an 8 hour day on writing, but typically I can only get about 3 to 4 hours in before my husband's like, Can you get up from the computer? Can you come out and do this? So, yeah, so he's retired, so we're both at home. It was a lot,
Oh, wow.
yeah, it's a lot easier. It was a lot easier to write when he was actually still working. But
I can imagine.
yeah, so it's, there's this part of me that's really frustrated that I can't write for as long as I want to write. I don't have a problem of, and maybe it's because I'm self-published and I don't have people looking over my shoulder, and I just put it out there for the world to consume, and someday hopefully they'll find me. But it's one of those things where
It feels like it's like you're a, like this little like boat in the middle of the ocean,
oh,
like,
does
hey,
it?
I'm over here, doesn't it?
It's interesting. It's the funny part of it was, as I told one of the other authors I had on the show, so I quit PNG, resigned from PNG to become an artist, and then somebody in the trade gave me one of their trade surveys, and it came out as like 4.2 million artists in America alone. That's not even the whole world, so it's a bigger number when you add in Europe and other places. So I'm like sitting there going, oh great. So I left this, small pond of corporate America consumer products heaven or whatever, and went into this thing where there's 4.2 million starving artists out there. And then I said, oh, okay, well I'll go write. And then there's probably about that or more writers out there in the
Oh yeah,
world too.
definitely. And they're all on Twitter.
Yep, all on Twitter at 5 a.m. right? So
Yes, exactly.
yeah, so probably I have to say that you probably don't have any regrets though, right?
In terms of what?
Being a writer in general.
No, it's what I, it's like, I just feel like my dream is to write books, and just the idea that I got a book published is amazing to me.
Yeah.
And then to have it have been people actually like it, it's just kind of like, that's even more amazing to me. So, and then to have two books out, that's like even more amazing to me. So I'm just
Right.
kind of, it's funny because I think, publishing, I help, I interact with a lot of emerging writers who don't have agents yet or publishing deals yet. And I try to explain to them that, like, you have to, publishing's brutal.
It is.
It makes no sense. It's just as much about luck as it is about talent. I always think it's funny when people act like, oh, well, I'm successful because of XYZ. And it's like, you're successful probably because of just as much because of luck. You're lucky. And so, I try to say to them, like, try to enjoy the small victories. Like, if an agent, wants to read your full manuscript, yes. So to get an offer, yes. To have an editor even give you an R&R, like, just to try to enjoy those moments because they're so few and far between,
Right.
So, because a
Yeah.
lot of them are, it's like funny how you were saying earlier, like, when you were 22, you got that what you thought was that rejection, and you thought you did, you're a horrible writer. It's like, so many writers are like that. There's like that imposter syndrome is so real, and I think it's because we think of it's a certain formula. When it's not, it's so much about luck. So.
Yeah, it's been interesting because a couple of my fans have come back and said, well, I want to read your Star Trek, Next Generation script. I'm like, no, they own the rights to that. It's like they don't own the rights to that particular script, but they own the rights to all those characters. And it's like, I can't exactly go out and publish that. And is explaining that whole thing to them, was kind of an interesting exercise. Let's put it that way.
What's interesting? It's not this is not saying that they are like that, but I think a lot of people don't cons realize that, like, writing and art, that's something that people sh can get paid for and should get paid for. Do you know? And I think, like, I feel like a couple, like, months ago or weeks ago, there was like this whole big thing where, like, there was that guy who had that website that was basically had everyone's books on there free, and people just didn't understand why people were upset about it. And it's like, because I worked hard on that, and I should people writers should be compensated. And I think people think because writers, anyone technically can put words on a page and form a sentence, they think writing's easy. And good writing just looks easy, so it's interesting. And something I had to realize myself was, like, I have to treat this like a business. And I remember I was teaching an online writing class, and, like, I'd give them really good detailed notes. And after class was about to be over, one of my students said to me, like, oh, well, are you still going to give us notes? And, like, the assumption was that I was going to give my talent and time freely to you, and I had to kind of just be like, well, if you would like to, pay me, then yes, I would be happy to do that, but that was, it was hard for me to even to say that, you know, but the idea of trying to treat this artistic endeavors as, you know, something that you should be compensated for, I think it's something that we it could be tricky for us, but we need to do so.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I find interesting in the conversation is, you know, a lot with the self-publishing, because we don't have agents and things like that, you know, it's like, you know, give a book away for free. And I'm like, why? You know, it's like, if I give it away for free, then they're going to think the second one's going to be free, and they're going to think the third one's going to be free. And, you know, as I always, one of the things that I always say is, you know, free doesn't mean that they're loyal fans. You know, I have a group of people that are waiting for me to release the second book as free, because I thought, well, okay, I'll try it their way. Release the first book as free a couple times a year. But, you know, I don't see that converting over to them buying a second and third book.
They get it because it's free.
Yeah, they're waiting for it to become free. Now, the people that have paid for my books, you know, are the ones that are writing me and saying, when's book five coming out? You know, and it's like, and don't mess with this character because I really love him the way he is. Like, no, sorry, I'm going to mess with that character because you told me not to. So, so that kind of thing happens. But yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about your covers. They have a very great, like a graphic novel feel to it. The novel isn't a graphic novel though, right?
No, it's not.
Yeah,
It's a
so
cozy.
she said it's cozy. And yeah, so it was kind of interesting when I saw it. I was like, oh, you know, this whole conversation about graphic novels now being the hit thing. Doing something like that would scare me immensely. I mean,
I don't self-publish. I had a publisher, and so I did not. They were the ones who were the lead on those
on
covers.
the
I think
covers.
they're gorgeous.
Yeah, I think
Yeah,
so
so
too.
what happened is like a lot of cozies or amateur detective novels usually don't have a face on them, you know, like if at most they might have a body part. And so my book, actually the original title, well, the second title that I sold it under was called oh my God, what was it called? Payday. It was called Payday. And so their first round of covers, it was a more traditional cover where it was like you could just see her leg getting out of a car. And then my publisher decided that they wanted to actually make Dana the focus. They wanted to have her on the cover just as the focus, which is great because it doesn't happen a lot in cozies. Also because it was a black woman, and now there's a few more. But when I was first published, there were like no, like maybe one. I think Alexia Gordon was the only black woman who was publishing a black woman cozy series. And so that idea that they wanted to actually kind of not hide from that, but kind of embrace that, really just, I was so happy about that. And then they, I'd given them the name of this off this illustrator who we found on Instagram. And that was, I think, their idea with him was to kind of make it very based on his style, more graphic design looking. And so I love both my covers, especially the first one. I just think it's like it's every t I see it, just makes me so happy. It's just 'cause I think it's so breathtaking and it's so different than what you see and expect from cozies. So
I really like them. I think they're beautiful too. So
thank
coming from
you.
my
I
art,
can take no
art
credit, but I will still say thank
knowledge.
you.
So I'm just really kind of curious, because you mentioned that, you know, it's a black character. And do you get a lot of, I'm gonna say crossover? Do you have a lot of Caucasian fans, white fans, however you want to say it, Latinos, Hispanics? Do you know?
I don't keep track. I think so. I know that there are I think it's great because as a like I said, I've been reading mystery since I was probably 10 or 11, and so I think it was hard because I love mystery so much, especially amateur detective, and to not see myself or just to see myself relegated as like that sassy best friend who's always so stereotypically like, hey girlfriend, like, you know, like, it's just like it's so heartbreaking for me. And so I do have I've had black women who like will write me like, I'm so happy to finally see a black woman in this type this genre I love. But then I have had older white women who are write me and they say, oh, I love your book too, you know. And I think that was my goal, was to make it an accessible book for everyone, where, you know, because obviously like we're all people, like, you know, like I don't like that, but like that idea that there's she's definitely a black woman, but it's not like it's this it's I it's not nothing's wrong with an issue book. My book's not an issue book, and I kind of I think that that's important too. I always say, like, white people have they have their funny books, they have their serious books, they have their good books, they have their bad books, and I feel like they expect for us, if I'm a black woman, like, your character has to be black for a reason. Like, no, she doesn't. I'm not black for a reason. I'm black, you know? And so I think people of color, we should also be able to have our funny books and our serious books and our issue books and our books where just a character just happens to be black just because she's black, or she happens to be gay, or she happens to be Latinx, or whatever it is, you know? And so I purposely wrote a book where the characters just happens to be black, you know, and she's definitely has certain elements of being a black woman in there just because that's what I am. But it's not like her main focus and like what's driving the story.
Great. I love the way you said that. That was wonderful. So,
Thank
yeah. Well,
you.
yeah, I mean, it's as a white writer, it's very like I have a really wonderful. I love my Washington D.C. police chief in the first book is African American, and he's based on a friend that I knew at Procter and Gamble, and I loved them to death. And he had this booming bass voice, and whenever I picked up the phone, I'd hear that voice, and it was just like send chills down my spine. It was so wonderful. And so, you know, I would say it's like very hard for me unless I think of a person of color that I know, you know, for me to actually write that character because there's so much unknown to me about living that way. So I think, you know, that's the old adage that they always say, writers write about things that they know. So it makes sense, you know, so.
I think it's tricky. I think it's a tricky thing where it's like, I think all books should have more diversity, but yes, you're going to have to, especially if you're writing a character, the lead who's of color, you have to do the research. You know, and I think there's some writers who don't want to do that. They want to just like, oh, like a pat myself on the back and have a color who character who's black, but they don't want to research what it means to be a black person in America, because there's definitely black culture is definitely American culture, but there's certain things that are going to be different. Like my brother driving down the street and sees a cop is going to react differently than a 60-year-old white woman driving down the street and see a cop. You know what I'm saying? Like small things like that, that I think you have to put forth. But like just how people research, I don't know if you want to. I'm hoping that if you have a story set in, I don't know, like China or whatever, or like, you know, you're going to research that, or if you have a cop character, you're going to research, you know, cop like police procedure. Hopefully you'll be willing to research p people of color of the character that of your character as well. And I think it's funny because there's like the whole idea of sensitivity readers, which is having a person of that culture read your book for issues. Some people want to scream censorship, but it's like you don't have a problem, like, you know, with like a police officer or something like that reading your book, but when it because it's race and race is such a hot topic, all of a sudden it's censorship, which it's not at all. So,
Or being marked explicit, which this show will be marked now since we're talking about this. But not
yeah.
by me. That's the interesting thing is I don't mark it explicit, but
Oh,
then
so wait, is it really going to be explicit because of this topic? That's
probably.
interesting. I feel like we should start cursing now.
There you go. That
Fully embrace explicit.
would be. Go ahead. No, but seriously, I mean, I've gone back and looked out on iTunes and a couple of my podcasts have been listed as explicit, and it's because some of them I would be talking with like master artists, and then we would start talking about, you know.
Hello?
I'm sorry, you still here, Kelly?
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
Oh, okay. So I would be talking with a master artist, painter, and maybe we would start talking about, you know, how to draw the human body. And the next thing I know, that one's marked, you know, explicit. And I'm like, really?
I'm like literally like
So it's
rolling my eyes
amazing.
right now.
It's amazing what they, you know, what they consider. I mean, I'm asking from the standpoint of somebody that doesn't know. So that's why, you know, I would ask the questions that I ask. So kind of interesting from that standpoint, how we all, you know, look at censorship and different things like that. But so yeah, so it's really, you know, it's interesting talking with you about this because there's just so many different things that we can go in and talk about. So when you were working on Cold Case, I'm assuming, were you living in California at the time?
I did. I lived in LA for 8 years, actually.
Okay. And How did it, I mean, I assume you graduated from USC and then applied for positions, or?
No, so what happens, it's kind of like if you are trying to sell a book with an agent. So what happens is you get an agent, and then it's that agent's job is to get you a job. And so whereas it's like your agent's job to get you a book deal, it's your agent's job to get you a staffing position. And so what happens is they have what they call, like, you have a sample script. And that's kind of like your resume, where, like, so what they call a showrunner, who's kind of like the CEO of the show, it's always a writer. They will, like, read your script. If they like you, they'll bring you in for an interview. And if they like the interview, then they will hire you on staff for the show. So,
Oh, great. Okay,
and the
that's
script's never, just to be clear, the script is never for that show. So, like, I didn't submit a cold case script to work on Cold Case. I submitted a script for the show called The Closer. So that's the thing too, is, like, it's not like you're not submitting a script for that show.
okay. Interesting. So then you, and then it's like, this is always, I have a friend who is in LA and is a writer, screenwriter, director, and producer. His name's George Gallo. Don't know if you know him or not. But George and I have a number of conversations. We're very good friends, and he's also an artist, so we have wide-ranging conversations. And one, I guess a couple things, like I told him I was going to take my books and turn them into scripts, and he says, okay, well, send me them as you get them done. And he's going to be kind of like mentoring me, which is really cool. But
Oh, nice.
yeah, so it's one of these kind of things where it's like, okay, he gives some basic things you need to know. One page of script equals 1 minute, you know, so different things like that. So like you were saying, it's 42 pages, 42 minutes. And then since Cold Case is on regular TV, we call it regular TV, there's ads that get inserted in to each one of those. So you
Yeah, so
have to.
that's where those 18 minutes come into their commercial breaks.
Right. And then so you have to also figure out in your scene, right, when that break's coming.
Yeah, it's called
So
an act out.
yeah, an act out. Yeah. So see all these cool things that we're learning
It's
here.
interesting because so the act out, that's like that you said, the idea behind it, an act out, was back when people actually had to watch commercials, that you wanted to end the scene in that act before the commercial break, that last scene, on such a high point that people would stay and sit through like 3 or 4 minutes of commercials for things they already are gonna buy anyway, so they can just, like, see what happens next. And so I kind of actually use that for my chapters. I call them chapter outs, even though that's not what they are. I made the term up. But the idea of ending my chapter on a kind of a high point. So, like, the idea is like, oh, I'm just gonna read one more chapter. You know, like, that to me
Right.
is
Turn one more
good, a
page.
good book. Yeah, I just have to read one more chapter. So that's what my goal is. I don't know if it always happens, but my goal is definitely to have end each chapter on a high point. So.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too, like I think when I listen to you talk, you think in terms of scenes as well, like
Yes.
each chapter or whatever. And I found some authors that don't actually think that way as scenes, but naturally
Really?
think of them as chapters, and therefore they're following their outline so strictly that each chapter has its whatever outlined action of what's going to happen. But I do tend
Interesting.
to I tend to think I think more like you. In that, okay, the scene's coming to an end, but yet I want them to turn the page. So what's the next thing that, I want to lead them on with so that they turn into that page? And then, I don't know, have you read any of Ken Follett's work? So I'm trying to think. Well, he's got the Century Trilogy, which are like 900 page books, is the big one. But the one that got me interested in watching or reading his stuff was Eye of the Needle, and then Pillars of the Earth are two of his titles. And he writes, interestingly enough, but he'll have a chapter, and then in the chapter, and especially in the trilogy series, he takes a chapter, and then inside the chapter are like other chapters. So he's tracing the life of five families in the Century Trilogy: Ireland, England, Germany, Russia, and America are where the five families live. So each chapter takes you further with one of those family members in that country. And it starts, prior to World War I and goes all the way up for 100 years. That's why it's the tri century trilogy,
Oh,
following
wow.
these families. So, I started reading that, and I was sitting there thinking, oh, now that's kind of interesting. So I've kind of patterned my chapters that way, where even though I think in scenes, I'm also thinking of, okay, I have to deal with one character in here, all of my characters in here, so that I keep moving their storylines on, and keep people interested. Like, I can't forget about my assassin. I have to tell people what's going on with
Right.
him, that kind of stuff. Do you kind of see the same thing happening in your books?
Well, my books are first person, so I don't have to worry about that good
Oh,
stuff. I
good
can't
for
even imagine
you.
having to do all the, yeah, I write first person past, so I don't have to worry about, maybe that's why I don't write third person, but I don't, everything I do is just like what my character knows, so.
Ah, cool. Yeah, now that's, believe me, when you get to where I am on book five, you wish you would have written it in first person.
Yeah.
So I mean, I have like probably 300 line timeline going in Excel with everybody's birth dates and everything on it, just so I can keep them all straight. I mean, it's pretty complicated. So I guess that's probably why I need an 8 hour period to write in as well. So, what's up next for you? What do you, are you just kind of gonna have a
So
speaking engagements, or?
I have an ev when is this coming out?
This will be launched probably about Monday or Tuesday next week.
Oh, perfect. So I have a event in Princeton, New Jersey next Saturday at the Cloak and Dagger.
Okay.
I will be having a kind of discussion with some other mystery writers and signing some books. And then on I think Sunday there's something called the Cozy Mystery Crew. They're having their anniversary party at the Facebook party. So I'll be participating in that and giving away a book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then I think in May, it's so funny, I never think I'm busy, but then I have a lot of stuff. And then I think in May I'm gonna be at a Barnes and Noble in like Monmouth County just to do like a mystery read like
Oh, cool.
writers event too. So
Yeah,
yeah.
so, and is all that on your
You know what? I should put it on by Monday. I
website?
think, let me look. I'm like the worst. I'm like the worst when it comes to my events. I know I have the Cloak and Dagger one on there because I actually put it on there. I think I don't I should probably put those Facebook events on there too, huh?
Yep.
Now you're inspiring me, Linda. Thank you. But yeah, I have the Cloak and Dagger one, and I guess I'll put the mystery, I'll put the Facebook one on there
Yeah.
too. So
Put that all on there, so, and then tell us,
yeah.
your website is
It's
kellygarrett.com.
yeah, but it's my name is Kellye, and then it's Garrett, Garrett. So it's like Kelly E. Garrett, I guess you could say, but it's
Yeah.
just my name has an E at the end of it. So
Okay. So cool. So yeah, everybody go out and check out Kelly's website, and she'll have all her appearances on there, hopefully by
yeah.
Monday or Tuesday. If not, there is a
Don't get
contact.
mad if I don't, though.
I say if not,
Yeah,
I think there is a contact. My contact information, so you could always write her or find her. You're on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook and I'm
Yeah.
on Twitter and I'm on Instagram,
So you
so
can
you can
find her
find
there
me on all
too.
those.
You can shout out to her there.
Yes.
So Kelly, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I want to give you an
Of
opportunity
course.
though to talk about something that we may not have covered, but that you wanted to get out there. Is there anything?
I'm trying to th I feel like we covered everything that I wanted to talk about. I think one of my big things is diversity in crime fiction and making it more inclusive. So we have a group now called Crime Writers of Color. I started it with me and Walter Mosley and Gigi Pondian, and right now we have over 135 people who write crime fiction who are of color. And they're from all different areas of their career, where like we have like the Walter Mosleys, Sujata Massis, who have been doing this for 20 years and winning awards for it. And then also we have people who don't have agents yet who are just starting out. And so we do have a Twitter account, which is Crime WOC on Twitter. And then we also have a Facebook page. So if you do want to, if you're like a mystery writer, a reader rather, and you do want to kind of expand your reading horizons to be more diverse, definitely follow those two accounts. So
Yeah,
that'd be great.
great. So yeah, so like I said, I was so glad that we've hooked up, and please keep in touch. and just drop me emails from time to time or whatever. And if I have any questions, I certainly know I'm where I can go ask some locally if I decide that, to bring in, make my books a little more diverse. Hopefully I can call on you to kind of help me with that. So
I will help you.
yeah. So, and I'll make it worth your while. So
Oh, well, hey, I'll really help you that case.
So anyway, that it's been really, really great talking with you. I'm glad we've hooked up. I'm glad we've had an opportunity to talk. And thank you so much for your time, because I know it is precious. So
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation.
yeah, it was fun. So
It was fun.
okay, so everyone out there, next art chat will be with a master artist. I'm still trying to nail that down, so I will let you know. Please keep in touch via Facebook. And it will always appear in your iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify feeds when this does get published and when the next one comes up. So more to come on that, and also be announced in the newsletters. So again, if you want to know more about Kelly Garrett, please go out to her website, Kelly, KellyGarrett.com, and she'll be very happy to hear from you, I'm sure. So thank you all so much. Thanks for listening to All Things Creative, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.